Today is Thursday, July 17th, and this is the World Socialist Website. U.S. Supreme Court greenlights destruction of the Department of Education by Nancy Hanover. In a decision with far-reaching implications for democratic rights and public education, the U.S. Supreme Court on Monday allowed the Trump administration to proceed with mass firings at the Department of Education. In a 6-3 vote, the court overruled a May 22nd decision by U.S. District Judge Myung Jun in Massachusetts that had temporarily blocked the layoffs. The unsigned emergency order, issued without argument or explanation, allows Trump to remove 1,400 workers from the department, fast-tracking his administration's long-standing goal of dismantling the cabinet-level agency established by Congress in 1979. The U.S. Department of Education oversees a wide range of programs serving the needs of 70 million students. It provides more than $120 billion in financial aid each year to over 13 million students across the country. In the 2020-2021 school year alone, it distributed over $100 billion directly to public schools, amounting to roughly 11% of all funding for public elementary and secondary education nationwide. Beyond the immediate issue of public education, Monday's ruling marks another major expansion of executive power by the Supreme Court, sanctioning Trump's drive to establish a presidential dictatorship. In a 19-page dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor, joined by Justices Elena Kagan and Ketanji Brown Jackson, cited Trump's long-standing pledge to eliminate the Department of Education, noting that doing so is unconstitutional, as only Congress has the authority to create or abolish federal departments. Sotomayor warned that the court's decision grants the president unchecked power to nullify laws enacted by Congress. She wrote, quote, "When the executive publicly announces its intent to break the law and then executes on that promise, it is the judiciary's duty to check that lawness, not to expedite it." The ruling, she continued, quote, "hands the executive the power to repeal statutes by firing all those necessary to carry them out," adding, quote, "the threat to our Constitution's separation of powers is grave," unquote. The High Court's ruling disregards statutory protections enacted by Congress against executive reorganization of federal departments, violates the constitutional requirement that the president, quote, "take care that the laws be faithfully executed," and undermines key legislation, including the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, the Higher Education Act, and the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. The latest ruling is part of a series of decisions by the gang of fascists that controls the court, aimed at dismantling fundamental democratic rights. In July 2024, the court endorsed Trump's claim of absolute criminal immunity for actions taken under his constitutional powers. In April 2025, it further gutted judicial oversight and due process by upholding mass deportations under the Alien Enemies Act. In the Trump v. Casa ruling of June 2025, the court stripped federal courts of the authority to issue nationwide injunctions against unconstitutional actions by the government, including Trump's drive to abolish birthright citizenship, a right guaranteed by the 14th Amendment. This week's decision, coming on the heels of last week's ruling permitting the mass firing of federal workers, clearly exposes the class character of the turn toward dictatorship. The dismantling of basic democratic protections to enforce the interests of the financial oligarchy. The existence and expansion of public education in the United States is the product of the American Revolution, the Civil War, the global impact of the 1917 Russian Revolution, the Civil Rights Movement, and mass labor battles of the 20th century. Democratic and social rights were not granted from above. They were won through struggle in the face of fierce resistance from the capitalist ruling class. The dismantling of public education is a key element in the bipartisan social counter-revolution waged over decades by both Democrats and Republicans. Under Trump, this assault has entered a new and far more advanced stage. Trump has made students, universities, and culture in general a primary target. Billions have been slashed from federal grants supporting the sciences, arts, and social studies. The spending bill signed by Trump earlier this month, which guts Medicaid and food assistance, also cuts $300 billion in federal student aid over the next decade. It imposes draconian repayment schedules, denies loans to thousands of prospective students, and imposes new taxes on universities. The Supreme Court's decision paves the way for an intensified assault on every level of public education and the plundering of its resources by the financial oligarchy through privatization. It aims to make meaningful education unattainable to the working class. Exposure to world cultures, history, the arts, and science is to be gutted and replaced with narrow vocational training. The ruling class seeks to funnel youth into two channels: the brutal reindustrialization of the U.S. at home and military service in the predatory wars of American imperialism abroad. While Trump is leading this assault, it is fully backed by the entire political establishment. The Democrats are doing nothing to oppose the dismantling of social programs because they support it. In cities across the country, Democratic mayors are themselves implementing sweeping cuts to social services and public education. Their opposition to Trump is not based on any principled defense of democratic or social rights, but centers instead on tactical differences over foreign policy, above all, the war against Russia. The Democrats have welcomed the White House's decision to resume arms shipments to Ukraine. The Supreme Court decision also exposes the bankruptcy of the trade union's claims that Trump and the financial oligarchy he represents can be stopped through the courts. In response to the ruling, the American Federation of Teachers, or AFT, issued a perfunctory statement warning that, quote, children would be especially hurt, and insisting that the union would, quote, never stop fighting. In fact, the union apparatus never started fighting. The AFT and the National Education Association, or NEA, have systematically blocked the mobilization of educators, students, and workers against the dismantling of public education. Instead, they offered false assurances that court challenges and appeals to Democratic politicians would somehow prevail. Teachers were told to participate in symbolic lobby days and walk-ins, don red shirts, and wait passively while their rights were stripped away. Any remaining illusions in organizations led by proven enemies of the working class, like AFT President Randy Weingarten, must be dispensed with. The Socialist Equality Party urges educators, students, parents, and all workers to build rank-and-file committees in every school, workplace, and neighborhood as part of the International Workers' Alliance of Rank-and-File Committees, or IWARFC. These committees must unite every section of the working class in a determined counteroffensive against the social counter-revolution being carried out by the financial oligarchy. The defense of public education cannot be left in the hands of the courts, the Democrats, or the trade union apparatus. It requires a mass, independent movement of the working class. The right to education, along with every other democratic and social right, including health care, housing, secure employment, and a livable planet, depends on putting an end to the domination of society by a parasitic ruling elite. This means a fight to expropriate the wealth of the oligarchs, dismantle their dictatorship, and reorganize society on the basis of socialism, the democratic control of the economy by the working class in the interests of human need, not private profit. U.S. police use Palestine Action Proscription to target protests mentioning Gaza and genocide, by Martin Smith. A protester waving a Palestinian flag and displaying a sign saying Israel is committing genocide was harassed by police and threatened with arrest under the Terrorism Act this Monday. The event in Canterbury
shows the march to a police state being carried out by the Labor government. Two officers approach the protester, asking, "What is your intention here today?" When the woman answered that her intention was to, quote, "wave this flag and keep Palestine in the public consciousness," she was questioned, quote, "Do you support any proscribed group?" Direct Action Protest Group Palestine Action was proscribed as a terrorist organization on July 4th, meaning expressing support for the organization is punishable by up to 14 years in prison. A police officer responded, quote, "The way you're behaving at the moment would lead me to believe that you may be a supporter," unquote. The woman answered clearly, quote, "I do not support any proscribed group. I support a free Palestine and the end of genocide." The officer says, quote, "Support of this," the sign reading "Israel is committing genocide," mentioning freedom of Gaza, Israel, genocide, all of that, "it will come under proscribed groups, which are terror groups, which we have suspicion that you're supporting based on your actions here in a city with the flags and the posters you've got up," unquote. He goes on to read from the Terrorism Act, citing, quote, "expressing an opinion or belief that's supportive of a proscribed organization," then adding, quote, "Now that you have done," the protester replies, quote, "That's ridiculous. You're going to end up arresting half the country. So I can never do this again?" The officer replies, "It's an offense." When the protester asks if they can ever, quote, "do this in public again," the officer replies, quoting, "If you just had a flag, we'd probably say be careful what you do. But in the context of the statement, Free Gaza, which is supportive of a proscribed organization, and a sign stating Israel is committing genocide would be in line with," but his colleague interrupts, quote, "what you're doing is giving us suspicion. We only need 2 out of 10 to give us suspicion that you support a Palestinian group," unquote. Whether this is official policy to be applied wholesale across the country or not, it shows the powers given to police by Labor's proscription to intimidate and potentially criminalize any protest activity against the Israeli state's internationally recognized genocide in Gaza, or in defense of the Palestinians. Refusing Palestine Action interim relief from the effects of the proscription order until a judicial review can be held, Mr. Justice Chamberlain accepted that the order, quote, "will undoubtedly have severe effects on the claimant and many others," and, quote, "cast a long shadow over legitimate speech." What that means has now been demonstrated. The Canterbury protester is right that applying this standard universally would mean arresting at least half the country, an impossibility. But the Labor government and its police force will use this broad license selectively, going after the most politically active individuals in an attempt to paralyze broader mobilizations. Members of left-wing political organizations who have already been arrested in significant numbers at anti-genocide demonstrations on bogus charges of hate speech will likely be heavily targeted. The Terrorism Act, now made applicable to widely held political opinion, gives the police enormous powers to detain, search, and seize possessions, which it can use to surveil and move against the government's political opponents. The day after this event in Canterbury, 3 women were arrested under the Terrorism Act in Edinburgh after a van was driven into the fence of a factory owned by arms manufacturer Leonardo. Shut Down Leonardo, a direct action campaign, posted a photo of the van, a Palestinian flag hanging from the back, with 3 women and police on the roof. The organization explained, quote, "Scottish group launches by taking action against Leonardo's Edinburgh factory. The front of the site has been damaged, and action takers drove a van into the perimeter. This factory makes laser target systems for Israel's F-35 fighter jets. If the 3 arrested activists in Edinburgh are prosecuted under the Terrorism Act, then the arguments relied upon by Chamberlain in rejecting interim relief from the PA prescription are null and void," the judge said in his judgment, insisting that the order would have no broader gagging effect, that individuals, quote, "who were members of PA prior to prescription would be allowed to continue protesting." He added that, quote, "even if their protests take the form of direct action, which involves criminality, the fact that they were previously members of an organization which is now proscribed would not, as a matter of law, aggravate their criminal conduct. The basic point is that the proscription makes membership and support of the specific group, Palestine Action, a terror offense, and nothing else. Direct action in the Palestinian cause, including action which may be judged criminal at court, is not in and of itself terrorist, even by the anti-democratic order of the government. But as the police harassment in Canterbury makes clear, the government's intentions are far broader, aimed at taking a sledgehammer to democratic rights and to criminalize the mass popular movement against imperialist-backed genocide. Indiana Kroger workers reject second sellout contract approved by UFCW Local 700 by Aaron Jefferson and Kevin Reed. On July 11th, 8,000 Indianapolis Kroger workers rejected a second tentative agreement contract negotiated by the leadership of United Food and Commercial Workers, or UFCW Local 700. The first tentative contract was voted down by the rank and file on May 31st. By a margin of 74%. As of this writing, Local 700 has not released the vote totals, but even though workers also authorize a strike in their first vote against the contract, the union bureaucracy has said nothing about a job action and refused to prepare the workers for a walkout. The tentative agreement included only a 90-cent increase over 3 years for starting pay and a $200 Kroger gift card. Workers describe this as insulting and a slap in the face amid rising living costs and record corporate profits. Veteran Indianapolis Kroger worker George Fish said, quote, "Central Indiana Kroger made $4.3 billion in profits in 2024. The union called for a yes vote on both contracts, arguing that this was the best we could get. We Kroger workers had other ideas. The main issue with the contract was too low wage increases, which were well below the 25% increase we've all had to face. For example, at top tier, my wage increase would be only $2.75 over 3 years, or $20.35 3 years later, when I need $22 per hour now just to break even. For lower wage brackets, it was even worse, with the lowest bracket getting only 90 cents over 3 years," end quote. The UFCW Local 700 officials did not provide workers with a complete copy of the tentative contract and gave them 3 days to review the highlights, which included 11 bullet points. Among the items on the list with no details were protects quality, affordable health care for members and your families, and adds life-saving coverage for transplant procedures. The agreement also failed to address widespread understaffing and deteriorating working conditions. As Fish explained, quote, "I'd also add we have problems with understaffing, and since our starting wages are lower than you can get elsewhere, Kroger has trouble hiring and retaining people. It relies on part-timers and teenagers." Fish commented, quote, "Kroger offered a $200 gift card that can only be spent at Kroger, which workers found insulting. Healthcare remained two-tier, although transplants were now covered. Kroger did make one concession. It did agree to a 3-year contract instead of the 4-year contract, which it wanted. Kroger seems to be trying to foist 4-year contracts and right-to-work states, which Indiana is, as it did in Georgia," end quote. Fish said a group of Kroger workers are circulating a petition seeking 300 signatures demanding dollar wage increases, not cents, fair staffing language, and affordable health care. Workers have also raised the necessity of having greater job security against the threat of further automation and AI. This is the consecutive round of contract talks where workers have overwhelmingly rejected sellout contracts brought by the UFCW. In 2022, when workers rejected a sellout contract, the UFCW made them vote again and again until they claimed it was finally ratified. To hide from rank-and-file anger, the local responded by deleting its entire Facebook page. "Workers are once again furious at UFCW officials," On Facebook, workers reported being threatened by union reps, who warned they could be replaced if they strike, and said the vote was deliberately scheduled while many were on vacation. In 2022, workers at Kroger formed a rank-and-file committee to oppose the union sellouts and push for strike action. In a statement, the committee explained that its goals were to, quote, fight to establish rank-and-file control over the entire process, develop solidarity and collaboration among Kroger workers across the U.S., and expose and fight against the betrayals of the union bureaucrats. Such a rank-and-file rebellion is once again needed. The UFCW is engaged in a nationwide sabotage campaign against around 100,000 workers in numerous regions whose contracts are expiring or have expired and who are pushing for strike action. They are doing everything possible to preempt a national movement by ramming through sellouts one by one. In Southern California, where the contract for 45,000 grocery workers had expired, the UFCW carried out a series of empty practice strikes, only to ignore its own strike deadline and announce a deal falling short of workers' demands. The ratification vote is widely suspected of fraud, suppression, and manipulation. The number of ballots cast have not been released, while in some cases, union officials have claimed 85% of workers voting in favor of the sellout agreement, which included a dollar per year in wage increases or less. The workers were never given an opportunity to review the agreement and were only given self-serving highlights about the contract through Zoom information sessions. In Colorado, UFCW Local 7 did everything to keep workers at the King Soopers and Safeway chains isolated from each other. It shut down a King Soopers strike at the start of the year with a labor peace agreement, then called a limited strike at Safeway in June. They kept King Soopers workers on the job past the expiration of the labor peace deal, and then announced deals at both chains at the start of the month. Once again, only contract highlights have been released by the UFCW, and in the case of the agreement with King Soopers, refers to, quote, strong wage increases for top rates, grandfathered employees, and department managers, without details as to what these wages are. There is enormous potential for a powerful movement. In Indiana, working class support for the Kroger employees is strong. According to Fish, quote, the official word is that unionized drivers at the Kroger warehouse in the Indy suburb of Shelbyville, members of Teamsters Local 135, would honor a Kroger picket line and not make deliveries, which it does 7 days a week. Also, Pepsi vendors, also Teamsters Local 135, would deliver to the parking lot only, not enter the store and set up, unquote. But the stronger the workers' position, the more openly and shamelessly the bureaucracy is acting against workers. The actions of the UFCW are of a piece with the sellout of the Philadelphia City Workers' strike by AFSCME earlier this month, which was called off without any gains when the strike was at its peak. In response, Philadelphia workers have formed their own rank-and-file committee to take the fight out of the hands of the apparatus. Such committees must be built in industries across the U.S. and the world as the scaffolding of a new movement in the working class. The enormous power workers have can only be used effectively once they establish their independence from the union apparatus, the Democratic and Republican parties, and all the pillars of class rule. This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist Website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.